Do you have questions or comments?
Yes. So in the refraining part, I'm never clear whether simply not doing it or having the thought to do it and then not doing it.
Yeah.
you know, aside from the fact of how to do that, which I can understand, the positive
from
a different
refraining. How does the refraining thing work? Okay, so how does the refraining thing work? I think one of the chief ways it works is in terms of having the precept and you're making the decision ahead of time, I'm not going to do this, and then you're not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so I think that's one of the chief ways the refraining works. And then another way is you're in the situation, the thought comes to do it, but you say to yourself, well, I'm not going to do it. Yeah. But then I used to think, well, you know, does that mean every morning I have to look at everybody and think, I want to kill them and then say, no, I'm not going to kill them? Yeah. In other words, do you have to have the intention to do it in order to refrain yourself from doing it? Yeah? So that doesn't make any sense at all, you know, to think like that. And so that's why I think where the value of having the precept comes in, because you've already thought, I'm not going to kill them. Yeah? Okay. But then many times in certain situations we can see something happening and, you know, and it really takes some power to restrain ourselves, especially the speech one. That one's really hard, isn't it? Yeah. Because the words, you know, they're kind of out of our mouth before we can hold them back in. Yeah?
In terms of the not using speech to create the clarity, I was thinking about having this kind of long-standing patterns of friends of like welcome to the mirror, welcome to them, and I can see, you know, working on breaking the patterns, complaining about other people to them, but I seem to think of a girl sometimes who will complain about someone in her life, and I get really affected to that level like, that I'm on her side. Against this other person, and it's just such a long pattern. How do you start to break that pattern? Because I know that she's doing it because it's a relative of hers, and I know she's part of the complaining is because she's worried about the person, but it will go on until we're not, and we're creating the harmony. And how do you start to break that?
Yeah. Okay. So you're saying, when you have a friend who kind of complains a lot to you about somebody and just goes on and on and on and doesn't stop until you get on her side against the other person.
Or even, like, I'll try to have a intention of, like, I'm not going to do that, but then I get caught up in it.
Okay. So you try not to get it, you know, get involved in it. But then your mind hears all these nasty things and you really do turn against the other person. And that's exactly what's so sneaky about divisive speech is when we use it, we may think I'm just venting, but it has that effect on the other person of turning them against the person we're mad at. So I think what's good is when we hear somebody bad rapping somebody else, yeah, at a certain point, extricate ourselves from the situation. Because I know sometimes if something's going on, like if there's turmoil in a community or somebody's angry, I might need to know about it. Yeah, just so I have some idea of what's going on when I'm with these people. But that's all I need to know. I don't need to know the details. I don't need to know blah, 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 you know. And so it's just at that point, and then, you know, you change the topic, you excuse yourself, you know, you might even get to the point of saying, you know, I really don't feel comfortable about the way we're talking about this person, or I think it might be more productive if we, you know, worked on forgiving them, or, hey, I went to a Buddhist retreat and I learned all these antidotes for working with anger, do you want to hear them? Yeah, something like that. Because I actually find it very uncomfortable when I'm with somebody who just goes on and on and on tearing somebody else apart. It's really very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have a question about the expression "something we do or something we do."
Uh-huh.
I remember thinking about that today when you were talking about that, and also something I read once that it seems like, and I've used that and it's helpful, but it seems mm-hmm. like there's a part of me that feels sometimes like unless you consider yourself one of the thinking beings, it's quite, it could be self-righteous. You know, even like I've read something once, a passage, and I know they didn't mean it that way, but just the way it hit me, it was like, just like pity. You know, it's like putting yourself above others mm-hmm. and I know it's not meant that way, but it seems like you have to just include yourself.
Yeah.
You know, like, I have compassion for others because I actually really can understand it because I'm in the same boat, or I, you know, I understand that sentient beings are doing this because I'm also a sentient being and I do this.
Yeah.
But it seems like,
okay. So what you're saying is there's a danger in using the expression sentient beings do what sentient beings do, that you could be condescending as if we weren't a sentient being and that's just this poor slod.
I don't think actually it's the same, because the same I think works. I think it's just more of a mindset.
Yeah, and it's true. It's, I mean, anything can we can twist.
Right.
Yeah, but it's, I think it is very important to realize that when we say sentient beings do what sentient beings do, if you ask yourself, am I a sentient being? I don't know about you, but the answer is yes. So I'm definitely included in there, you know. And it's like, okay, of course there's, you know, complaining about this and this, because, wow, I complain a lot, too. I may not complain about the thing they're complaining about, but, you know, I have mastered the perfection of complaining. So, you know, why shouldn't they have a chance at it? Yeah? No, all these things. It's like with a precious human life. Somebody once said to me, couldn't we get arrogant meditating on precious human life? Like, I have a precious human life with all 18 qualities and not everybody else does.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, sure, if you want to twist the meditation and do it, you can get arrogant, but that's not the purpose of the meditation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I reflected on for myself when you're talking about lying and not telling the truth is that I rationalize things. But as I thought about it, it's like I do that with all of them, where I minimize them or I create some self-justification for mm-hmm. what it is. You know, if I catch myself in that, you know, it's kind of somehow, yeah, just rationalizing it.
Yeah.
You know, great mind for that. You know,
yeah.
It's kind of like a good catch when I'm aware of it, and usually I don't always catch it, but it's like
mm-hmm. yeah. Oh, our own mistakes, we're very good at rationalizing them, very good at justifying them. Yeah. They aren't actual mistakes, they're, you know, they're things we've had to do given the situation. Yeah, or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. And so, like, this line, this letter, you know, women love, I think you kind of address it. It seems like it has to do with motivation in terms of the thing when you don't say things, as far as the sense of motivation.
Yeah.
Because you haven't said something. So it's mm-hmm. really, if you're doing, it is kind of a lie if you're just not saying something to protect yourself or in a way, you know, not even protect yourself, that might be valid. No,
there
just seems like there are situations where it's a lie not to say.
Okay, so the question comes, the sins of omission. Is this a Christian term? I hear it all the time.
It's a Catholic term? Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, here I think you really have to look at it. It's not telling everything lying. You know? I don't think in every situation that's it. Because if in every conversation we had to tell everything in order to be telling the truth, we could never finish a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Because when we're telling the truth, I mean, if I describe to you what happened yesterday at the meeting, if I don't tell you everything everybody said, is that lying? No, because otherwise it would take us 3 hours because we'd have to go over the whole meeting. So I compress it and I give you, you know, the gist of it. I think it's one of those touchy situations,
mm-hmm.
yeah, where you really have to look at, you know, what is your motivation, what is the other person's state of mind, you know, how are they going to interpret the situation? So sometimes it could be you're not saying everything, but what you're doing is you're stopping yourself from telling a white lie or a big lie,
mm-hmm.
okay? So, because sometimes people will say, well, my parents don't want me to go to the Dharma Center. Yeah? So does that mean that every time I have to go to the Dharma Center, I have to go and say, Mom and Dad, I'm going to the Dharma Center, because if I don't tell them, then I'm omitting
mm-hmm.
it. Well, no, because when you go out with your friends, you don't always tell them everything you're doing and everywhere you're going, and, you know, you have your own life, and you can go and, you know, do what you need to do, you know. And going to the Dharma Center is certainly something virtuous,
mm-hmm.
you know. Now, if you're going out to visit prostitutes and you don't tell your parents that, then, you know, something's wrong, you know. Because I think very often, why do we lie? It's because we're doing something else that we don't want other people to know about that's harmful. If we're doing something else that's virtuous, and for one reason or another, that person doesn't understand it, I don't think it's a lie to just not mention it to them.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're doing something harmful and we're covering it up, you know, out of self-concern and self-protection, and we're definitely trying to deceive the other person,
mm-hmm.
yeah, then we have to look at, well, what am I doing that I'm feeling I have to lie about it for?
Yeah, you know, as I'm sitting here, I'm thinking, this is the hook around the guilt. And for me, I'm just sitting here thinking that to separate guilt from regret, when I feel that thing come up, I think that would be helpful, because I think this was the hook of guilt.
Mm. The hook of guilt that you have to say absolutely everything.
Or the situations where you haven't said anything where that I don't feel good about. No, I just think that some of that just ties in with guilt and
I see what you mean.
Yeah.
Right.
It doesn't feel healthy. Something in this doesn't really feel right, but I think it maybe has to do with guilt versus
mm-hmm.
how much cleaner it feels when you regret something.
Right.
How much really more concerned about the other and even yourself in a healthy way.
Right. And I think that's very true. So how it relates to guilt would be when we're doing something that we don't feel good about,
mm-hmm.
that we know is damaging, and we cover it up, okay, then we definitely feel guilty about it. Because we might rationalize and justify, but inside we know that that's not something positive. And so because we cover it up, then there's a lot of guilt that comes. Actually, there's one mental factor. You know, when you look at the list of mental factors, there's one mental factor. And this is what it does, is it pretends not to have done things we did, and it pretends not to have qualities that we have, and it's the one that covers up everything. And that is very true, that is the source of a lot of guilt, because we can't just say it outright. Yeah? And so, you know, so frequently it feels like when we can just, like, say it outright, even though, you know, it's not so good.
Mm-hmm.
But just being able to say it kind of alleviates so much of that inner turmoil and tension about the whole thing.
There's there's a fine line between that. Sometimes I think, well, it's none of their business. You know, and especially when it comes, like, you know, you don't tell your parents that you go to the Dharma Center, in your example. But then what if they ask the director, do you go to the Dharma Center? You know?
Yes.
Right, but if they forbid you or something, I mean, like, you know, And I don't know, or here's an example, you know, I don't want certain people to know about my sexual orientation because it was my boss or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they asked me about, you know, somehow in conversation of relationships come along, I said, I had a relationship, blah, 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 and then they say, she, blah, 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 and, you know, I'm automatically assuming heterosexuality or something, and I don't correct them, but I just continue being in the third person, you know, is that misleading them, or, you know?
Okay, this question actually came up before. There was one woman who was gay, and you know, she says a lot of her clients come in and they'll say, you know, where did you and your husband go over the weekend, or what did you do? And you know, she says she doesn't feel like, you know, do I have to say, well, my husband's a woman, or you know, and it's like she felt like, well, is it lying just to go along with it? And I said, you know, this person, they're just making small talk, yeah? When they say the word husband, they're assuming heterosexuality, but what they really mean is your spouse or your partner. Yeah, that's what they really mean, is, you know, your spouse or your partner. And so I said, you know, you don't need to correct them and say my husband's a woman. You can just say we went to the movies. Yeah? I mean, I don't think that that's intentionally lying. I think it's just, you know, because it's a casual relationship, it's a relationship at work where somebody's just chit-chatting, you know, and your sexual life is your business, and I think you just say it. If it's another situation where, you know, you're making friends or something else is going on, where it's really necessary to be open about it, then I think it could be another thing. But in this kind of thing where it's not, you know, the person doesn't really care and they don't really want to know, you know? I mean, even if you're straight and they say, where did you and your husband go? You don't say, oh, well, my husband looks like this and looks like this and we go to bed together, you know? Yeah? You look perplexed, Barb.
I think it's really tricky, that one. It's really tricky.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have an answer at all, but there is something about, it's like somebody like your boss. This is a person you're in a relationship with every single day.
Mm-hmm.
They have an assumption that, like, you know, well, you know, sooner or later we get to, well, how is your girlfriend? Or, you know, you let that go for a while, and when they do find out, it's a betrayal. It can be a betrayal. Depends on how the situation is. So that particular one of how to protect yourself in society, but also to be honest to yourself and be honest with people around you, I think it's really difficult. And I don't know where the line about lying is. I think keeping that gender non-specific helps, but there is a place where it's just not.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a place when you know somebody well after a while, then, you know, you should feel comfortable enough to say something. But if it's a situation where you know, let's say your boss is bigoted, you know, that it's just like, well, why make that person's negative mind come up? You know, what I do at home is my own business, you can think. Yeah.
I just wonder if culturally we from our side, like I'm the employee with my boss, somehow think that my life should really be some kind of open book. And so the boundaries, you know, are really kind of odd.
Yeah. Would an employee expect their boss, if their boss were gay, to tell them? If you were an employee and said to your boss, you know, what did you and your wife do? You know, what did you and your husband do? But your boss, you know, is gay. Would you expect them, you know, is it going to be betrayal if they don't tell you right away?
Well, I think we have assumptions often that we're entitled to know this kind of information.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think the troubling thing is that if if you have, say, I had a husband and three children, then I talk about them as a course of my life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a gay person, however, and I have a whole life, and everybody's relating just about our lives, but I don't relate about mine. Because I'm afraid of the bigotry or whatever. Mm-hmm. And this creates this whole situation of secrecy and isolation, and then I start to feel really weird because I'm already really different, and they're talking about their weekends, they're really sharing about their lives, but I don't and I can't. And so that's where I start to wonder what's a lie. And
but to me, that kind of thing has more to do with oneself. Yes. and being attached to how other people see you. To me, that's not so much intentionally deceiving somebody else as much as it is with, you know, not necessarily being comfortable with who you are in the social situation.
I think it's part of it too. It's just a question of when does it start to be a lie?
Mm-hmm.
And when does it start to be more harmful?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to you as a person. But that's the thing. Are you do you just respond to the question, you know, because like I said, not everybody wants to know your personal life. Yeah? And so to talk about it when the people don't really want to know, to me that doesn't seem appropriate. Yeah, when people are chit-chatting. I mean, whether you're gay or straight, you don't, you know? It's like people don't want to know too much sometimes. But then, as a matter of being true to yourself, if you start to feel like you're starting to feel shame and you're covering things up and stuff like that, that's more to work, I think, on our own feeling of, you know, people feeling good about who they are and how they present themselves to the world. I think that's more the issue there than lying so much. It's more being, you know, more kind of feeling comfortable with who you are.
The same issue, but even more complicated, for example, with my grandparents, where I don't really want them to know because I think it would hurt them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is pretty old already, you know, and I don't think they'll accept it
mm-hmm.
at all. And so, you know, when we constantly ask if you have a girlfriend, I just automatically answer no, because I don't.
Yeah.
But I don't know, like, when are you going to have somebody? So it feels like I'm living a lie with them, but,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time, I agree, and it's very complicated.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it is complicated. It is complicated. I mean, if your grandparents are going to have a heart attack and they have absolutely no idea of what you're talking about, then, you know, I'm not interested in having a girlfriend right now, and I'll get around to that later. Yeah. Huh?
That's usually what I answer.
Yeah. Okay, let's sit quietly.